Well, anyway, let's go to 2 Timothy 3 to begin the message today. So I want to talk to kids today. But adults, don't turn off. I want everyone to listen. In one sense, we're all kids. We can learn from this point, I believe, that I make today. Further, we're a family. And our kids live and work and play and react with all of us. And so the adults here should be an example to them, and sometimes they're even counselors. I've noticed that sometimes the kids will go to other adults other than their parents with questions sometimes, so I'd like all of us to be armed with the message today, to be ready to give an answer to questions kids might ask them. So kids, don't turn off either. The sermon might not be what you think. There might be something here of great value to you. Being a parent today is really hard. It is. I suggest to you, being a kid is way harder. It's an unusual generation. The time we live in is speeded up enormously. We're all crowded in. We're surrounded by a sea of values that are contrary to everything that's good and right. A sea of values that are vile, carrying poison. And here kids are having to grow up in this time. And the effect on them, I think, is sometimes overwhelming, and they can become filled with a sense of defeat, and they can be demoralized by what they have to face. Sometimes parents have done the best they can with their kids, and sometimes the harder parents try, the more the kids resent them. In our society today, it's an interesting world we live in. But you and I are living in an age that could almost be characterized as a time of adolescent rebellion. It's prevalent everywhere, and our kids are growing up in it. And it was prophesied of our time here in 2 Timothy 3, where it says, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. Men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, and proud, blasphemers." And then it said they'd be disobedient to parents, unthankful and unholy. We're living in that age. We're living in the last days. And this is the world your kids, our kids, if you'll let me say it that way, are living in. You know, this probably existed in all of the past generations, because kids tend to, as they grow up, resist authority. They have to eventually become their own people. But today we live in a society in which the whole society encourages this, because it's in the music, isn't it? It's in the magazines. It's in the movies you see all the time. I remember just, what was that movie that had the alien that rode the bicycle? E.T. I watched E.T., and there it was. The kids had to hide the alien there from their parents, because parents can't be trusted. It's an innocent enough movie, but you understand the message it's sending to everyone who's watching it. The parents can't be trusted. And so it is that in the music, it's in the air, everywhere, anger and resentment, anger against authority, anger against parents. It's produced a whole different generation. It's called the MTV generation, a spirit of anarchy. That's what it is that's in our world today. Do your own thing. See, in the past, everyone in our society, all the children, were taught to respect parents and obey them. And what happened was the schools taught it. The churches taught it. Everywhere you went, you see, we're all on the same page. This was the right way to live. And kids who didn't obey their parents, they were thought of as like bad kids, you know? That's actually the way it was when I grew up and before I grew up. But today, anger's in the air, and it's being broadcast consistently. So kids who come from loving homes are now taught to defy their parents. It's on the television they watch, in the movies, and the music, it's everywhere. And it comes from the kids they associate with. I remember the 50s. Kids in school, You know what we got in trouble for? Chewing gum in class. Speaking out of turn. Today, it's drugs, it's guns. That's what they get in trouble for today. Things have changed. It's a different world. I'm glad I didn't have to grow up in this one. In the 50s, my day, here's the song they sang. Oh, my papa. To me, he was so wonderful. Oh, my papa. To me, he was so good. No one could be so gentle and so lovable. Oh, my papa. He always understood. That song reflected a certain mood that was in the nation at the time. There were always conflicts, of course, but family was family. We stuck together. It was different than it is today. It all began to change. The parent-teen conflict began to be featured in the media, and then a movie came out called Rebel Without a Cause. James Dean seethed with anger in this movie. It was one of the first times anybody ever did anything like this. Seized with anger against what he called his old man. You know what they did in our society? They actually made a postage stamp with James Dean on it to honor him. See, our values began to turn upside down. Then it came to be the 60s, and then rock and roll began to feature this. A song came out called Yakety Yak, Don't Talk Back. Everybody remember that, the older people? Yakety Yak, Don't Talk Back. And what it did was it sent a message to the kids, you're being repressed, you see. You can't speak out. That's all parents do is tell you, don't talk back. And then writers began to talk about what they called a generation gap. Psychologists said it was natural, a natural thing that kids would want to pull away and want to be different with their parents. It was all natural for them to want to have their own culture, their own clothes, their own magazines, their own music. And we should expect some rebellion from kids, they said. They shouldn't want to be with us as parents. I say this, it isn't a natural thing for kids to have a gap between them and their parents. I went to Guyana several years ago. It's a third world country. They don't have the influence that we have in Western society. We all got on this boat. We went to this island. Get off the island. And I noticed there were some teenage kids over there. And the kids were writing in the sand, the wet sand, Church of God. You know why? Their parents were in the Church of God. So the kids thought, we support what our parents or believe in and what they're doing. And then I'd watch because the parents would be talking with one another, little groups. The kids would all gravitate to where the parents were. And they'd listen. You know why? The parents were grown-ups. And the kids wanted to learn how to be a grown-up. And so they'd listen. They wondered, what are they talking about? There was an interest there. It was so different from our world today. Our world has been influenced. That's what it's like there. But that generation gap, you see, is recent to Western civilization. It isn't natural. Have you ever watched the animal world? The little bear cubs with their mom? Or even the little puppies with their mom and dad? You understand the point? The little animals trot after them. They mimic them because they want to learn how to be like they are. That's the way it's supposed to be. That's the way it's meant to be. But our society has completely ruined this, I think, saying that it's all natural to have a gap. And so this has been sown in our society. It's fertilized by human nature. But then this, the advertising industry has capitalized on this in a great way, haven't they? So they designed special clothes for kids, different clothes, different music, different magazines. And now you see the kids all have their own magazines and everything else. And the psychologists, they taught us that it was good, that we should let the kids be distant from them. And it worked wonderfully to divide the family and to separate the family. Let's go to Proverbs 30. Today the kids are tuned in to a whole different wavelength. They are on a different page in history, they believe. There's no compatibility with the past. And so few kids really will listen to their parents today. Few kids want to know what the parents are thinking. You ever heard this? Well, Dad or Mom, it's the 2000s now. You're out of touch. You're not with it. So it started in the late 50s. It widened in the 60s. And today it's become absolutely anti-parent. So in my age, they sang, "Oh My Papa." Today, a group called Suicidal Tendencies released this, "I Saw Your Mommy." The words go like this. "I saw your mommy and your mommy's dead. I watched her as she bled, chewed off toes and chopped off feet. I took a picture because I thought it was neat. I saw your mommy and your mommy's dead. I saw her lying in a pool of red. I think it's the greatest thing I'll ever see, your mommy's dead, lying in front of me." See, parents today, we actually can't hear the words. It sounds cacophony. It's loud. It's noisy. We don't hear the words. But the kids hear the words. They know the words of most of the songs. I remember there's another song, I don't remember who wrote it, but I remember listening to the words, and it said, "Kids, rise up in the night and kill your parents." That's some of the music that's out there today. I'm getting looks like they don't believe it, even from the young people. Yeah. Don't you remember Eminem's stuff? Yeah, Eminem is telling people about he's killing his wife, their kid's mother, and he's watching her drown there, watching the blood as it gurgles, he says. That's our modern-day music. Today, there's open hostility towards parents by the kids and growing areas of violence. The psychologists tell us now that one of the main growing areas is parent battering. They say that currently about 10% of parents experience this, where the kids push, they shove, they hit. They'll even use knives on parents. And so it is. Proverbs, I think, somewhere here. Hold on a minute. Yeah, Proverbs 30, verse 11. Speaks of the MTV generation here. It is our generation. I don't mean it's our kids. Our kids are nothing like this, but I'm saying to you, parents, I want you to think about the generation your kids are having to grow up in and what they're having to resist to be able to be decent kids in your family. Here's the generation they live in, verse 11. "There's a generation that curses their father and does not bless their mother. There is a generation that are pure in their own eyes, and yet they're not washed from their filthiness. There is a generation, and oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids lifted up. That is, they're filled with pride and arrogance. There is a generation whose teeth are like swords in the things that they say, and their jaw teeth is knives to devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men." Remember when I used to do air conditioning work and I would go to some convalescent homes and they'd tell me, well, these guys, there's young punk teenagers, would actually watch and they'd know when the elderly were going out to get their checks cashed, and they would attack them and take the money, the little money that these people would have. And so it is that this is the generation. So let's go to Isaiah 3. Isaiah 3. You know, it's amazing the world we live in today, but I know reading in the past about, wilding. Have you ever read about that? In New York City, the kids went wilding, they said. And it was simply just going on a rampage of anger to just destroy anything they could. And they videotaped it, and they talked about it. They wrote articles about it. And a lot of kids are doing this. It's happening in L.A. as well. Isaiah 3 and verse 12 says this, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths." Man, it's hard growing up isn't it, in our world today? Amazing. A time of senseless anger and violence is taking place. When I interviewed a police officer in L.A. there who was in the Santa Clarita jail, a sheriff, Mr. Love is his name, and he said this: there's 2,000 different gangs in Los Angeles alone. And he said the gangs are growing at such a pace that the police can't control it. I asked him, what's going on? He said, that's family. He said the gangs are family. The kids have a place where they feel accepted, where they don't feel accepted at home. And they have a place where they feel accepted and they're a part of it and they have respect there. And it means everything to them and they'll give their lives for it. It's an amazing world, an ugly one. There's availability of drugs everywhere. When I was in school, the kids who would smoke marijuana were like really scumbags. Today, they get high before going to school. And they get high. I mean, when I was in school, the kids would go in the bathrooms and sneak cigarettes. We didn't like need to smoke a cigarette. It was being cool. But now they just go smoke a joint right in school. It's an amazing thing. And I took a class in counseling, and there was a number of teachers in there because they had to work with and interact with kids, and they told me that they're having sex right on the school grounds and behind the trees out in the fields and stuff today. It's an amazing, anything's available, everything's available. And our kids, they're having to grow up in it. I'm asking the parents, understand the world we live in today and understand what our kids are going through. So, with all the sex that's going on, what do you think the school's answer is? Some in California, I know, are handing out condoms. Because it's not wrong to have sex at school, and it's not wrong to have sex when you're just kids. It's wrong to have it if it's not protected. And that's their answer to it, because it's so overwhelming, they can't seem to stop it. So the pressures on kids are so overwhelming, because it's the natural state of young people to need to be accepted, isn't it? And so they're so sensitive to peer pressure. I remember reading an example in a psychology test, and here's what they did. The psychologists had a classroom, and they had about 35 kids. Well, 32 of the kids were brought in and talked to by the counselor, and they said, we're going to run a test. We're going to ask the dumbest question you could ever imagine. We want you all to raise your hand. Yes, you agree. Okay? Now we're going to have 4 or 5 kids in the class who are not going to let in on it. We want to see what their reaction is. So the teachers would, or the counselors would bring them in. They'd talk to them a little bit. They'd ask the stupid question. You know, 32 hands go up. 30 hands go up. What do you think happened with those other hands? Well, they kind of didn't go up at first, but kind of they looked around and everybody didn't want to be different, and so numbers of them in most cases, not all, but in most cases would raise their hand. Why? To be part of the crowd, to be accepted, to be not weird and strange. Well, look what we do to our kids. We make them strange and weird because of the holidays they keep, because of the way they dress, because of the way they act. And we send them off to school, and I wonder how many times do we as parents appreciate the struggle they have and the good they do. I think it's worth considering it. So anyway, the problem today is the kids, they're designed to need acceptance. The peer group that they live with, our society today, they're insane. They live on the verge of insanity. And so the kids are affected by all of this, and it's there in spades, and it's pulling on them, and it's important, I think, for us to realize it. Now, kids don't always do everything right, and you can understand why I think in certain ways. And so some out there will blame the parents for it. They'll say that the parents didn't raise them right. And I want to combat that. I want to combat that a little bit. We as parents have certain responsibilities. That is, we're to teach our children, we're to monitor their behavior, set the best example we can. And as parents, we need to take this responsibility really seriously. But I ask this, Think about it. God is a family. He's reproducing himself. This is the purpose on life. It's why all the other planets are void. And he made this beautiful earth and all that's in it. And so family is the important thing. Remember that scripture that says that the invisible things of God are clearly seen in the creation? And that he has modeled everything and patterned it so that we're made in his image and so on. And we're reproducing. That is, family to me, if you were to look at that scripture, what's the single most important thing about being made in his image and the earth patterning and reflecting the things of God? Well, God's a family. This is the single most important thing to me. And we are to learn to live together and to learn to live together in love and work together. This is why I think God hates divorce so much. Here he has built this beautiful earth, wonderful as it is, with all of the pleasures in it. And then he's placed us in families. Let's go to Proverbs, Proverbs 22. And in all of this, God gave us children. I want us today to understand this. They're a gift, aren't they? Are your children yours? No. They belong to the Almighty God, and they're on loan to us. They're on loan to us. So we have a responsibility of training and preparing them, and I think it can be an almost frightening responsibility to train them and get them ready for adult life. So we need to be very involved. You understand the generation gap has really affected us in the wrong way. Kids today think parents have no right to go into the bedroom. Read an article in the LA Times. Family had, their son had killed somebody. The police went to the parent's home, looked in the kid's room, and they found drugs in his chest. And they found a gun, the gun that had been used in the murder. And the parents said, we had no idea. Why? Well, they weren't involved. Because, see, they believed this lie about the generation gap. And they distanced them. Said, well, we have to let them have some of their own privacy in their own life. Yes, you do. But not there. You understand? You need to know what they're doing. You need to know what they have in their rooms. You need to be able to go in there and look around from time to time. It is not a wrong thing, kids, and think they're not doing it to get you. They're doing it to help you in every case. But that's how it's worked so much evil. And so parents have the responsibility of training their children, and that's why it says in Proverbs 22, the famous verse, Proverbs 22 and verse 6, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. Now, what's interesting to me is the word train is not to give them a lecture. That isn't what it means. Parents do this pretty easily, don't we? We can nag, we can berate, we can tell them what they should do. Why, we can give them sermons, little mini sermons, all day and all night long. But to train means to mold and to shape. And so that means that we should have things that the kids do. They should have responsibilities around the house. But I want us to understand this. One thing it took me to learn a long time, you don't just tell the kids what to do, you do it with them. And that's how they learn, like little bear cubs along with the mother. That we should be with our children, working with them, so not only do they see, oh yes, I'm supposed to clean the garage, but they see, how is a garage supposed to be cleaned? But I've had kids tell me that they tell me to do this, but they never showed me how. They expect me to know. You understand? That's training a kid by our example and by working with them. Because they aren't our servants. It's not Cinderella, is it? No, it's children on loan from God in which we have a responsibility to train and be with them and mold them and shape them so that they can be responsible adults in the future. To this end, there is a place for discipline. Proverbs 19:18, you have to turn there. It says, chasten your son while there's hope, and don't let your soul spare for his crying. So let's go to Ephesians 6. There's times when little children, I think young children should be spanked. When they're older, it's too degrading, really. You don't want to do that, I don't believe. There's times when you must say no, though, and there's restrictions and groundings and all of that to discipline and train. But to me, the single most important training tool we have, it's this. It's love. I'm telling you, we don't say it enough. And we don't show it enough. We really don't. And so there's warnings that God gives us about the way we raise our children is going to produce two possible wrongs, two possible ways that we negatively affect our children. One is Ephesians 6 and verse 4, and it says this, "You fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." So parents can be so strict and expect so much from their children that they don't think they have a life. I remember when I first came in the Church of God, I was shocked because I'd look at children and they looked like they were 35 years old. They had to sit there perfectly and never make a wrong move, never say the wrong thing. I thought, what happened? They'd stolen their childhood. But you understand my point. You can be so strict that you're going to make them mad. You're going to make them resentful, and they're going to do stuff to get back. And we got to avoid that. In Colossians 3, verse 21. So you can provoke some children will react. They'll get angry, and they'll react that way. Other children will go the opposite direction when they're over expectations and when they're pushed too restrictive in their lives. It says, "Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged." Because what do you do when everybody's bigger than you? What do you do when they make life impossible for you to reach the standards, or they're never happy? You can never do enough. You're never okay. Anybody grow up like that? We don't want to do that to our children, do we? You're never okay? No, you're the reason that the earth exists, so that you can become the child of God. You understand my point? So what happens is, some children, they'll push back. Other children will cave in, and they'll become depressed, and they won't ever accomplish anything, and they won't think, I can't accomplish anything in life. So those are the two ditches. So we don't want to fall into those. I see this more and more in my old age. The tool was love. That's what it was. Love and acceptance. We always err going to extremes, it seems. Parents over-discipline. Some do scare the kids. They raise them in fear. Others love them to death and never discipline them. And you get spoiled brats sometimes. See, but the best way to me is this. Love them, teach them, and then love them. Love them, teach them, discipline them, and love them. But you understand my point. That aspect of loving them has to be in there. If I had it to do over again, I know I could do it better. I wouldn't do it perfect because I am not perfect. But I would do it better. And there's a poem I read that kind of, I think, reflects the way we should raise our children. Says this, "If I had to do it over again, I'd finger paint more and point the finger less. I'd do less correction and more connecting. Take my eyes off my watch and I'd watch with my eyes. I'd take more hikes and fly more kites. I'd stop playing serious and seriously play. I'd do more hugging and less tugging. I'd build love first and the house last." So parents have this responsibility, and we should take it serious. We have a profound impact on our children. We really do. But I want the young people to understand this. If the parents were responsible for the kids, we would have a different world we live in. We really would. We wouldn't have the deep, dark problems because the parents want the best for you. They don't always do it best, but there's nobody in this world, by the way, who loves you like they do. There's nobody, there isn't, who would sacrifice for you. Your friends will, they'll abandon you when things aren't going well. If you're looked down on by other kids at school, believe me, your friends are going to abandon you. Your parents won't. no matter what you do. They're going to love you. They just, we haven't really known how to be the right kind of parents because it's Satan's world. But I want you to realize this. You today in this world are not just reacting to your parents' mistakes. You're not just reacting to the world you're in. Not just the hypocrisy of the age and the hypocrisy you may appear to see in your family, but you're reacting also to the broadcasts of Satan, the devil. There is a very real devil. And I want to say this to the also, that the parents are not responsible for the kids' failures. Okay? And neither are they always responsible for their successes. I know a lot of people have come to me and they said, what wonderful daughter, what a wonderful son you have, haven't they? They just, everybody thinks they're just great. And they are. But it really wasn't me. I had three kids. Two of them turned out a certain way. And one of them turned out an opposite way. They were treated the same. They were loved the same. They were taught the same. But my point is that every one of us makes our own decisions. That no matter what you are like, no matter what you experience, you young kids are responsible for what? Yourselves. No matter what it is. See, the world that we live in was, I think, taught by psychologists what they call determinism. That is, they believe that each one of us is a blank slate and all your experiences go to make up who and what you are. But that isn't really true. It isn't really true. If that were true, you wouldn't have a chance with your kids at all because they watch more TV and they watch, listen to music more, and their kids' friends have more, an effect on them. Anyway, there's a whole new study that has come out, and it's called Social Biology, and they discussed this in U.S. News and World Report, and they said this: scientists have now speculated for generations that people are the products of their genes, but proof was lacking. Now that has changed. Solid evidence demonstrates our very character is molded by heredity. Now, when they say character, they don't mean holy, righteous character. That's molded by your choices using the Holy Spirit of God. What they mean is the tendency to react certain ways are part of a personality that you were born with. And so that you are you. It's not your parents' fault. It's not the school's fault. It's not the world's fault. You have the ability to make the choices you want to make. And you become who you want to become. Article says this: drawing on biology, anthropology, psychology, and economics, social biologists take the view that genes and environmental act as parts of a single system, sometimes in concert, sometimes quite separately, to mold what a person is. In this view, the human mind, rather than being a blank tablet to be filled from birth by family and society, is instead hardwired before birth with a predisposed personality. And so they found in the twin research that identical twins separated from birth, later on they find out they meet, they find out they have the same kind of house, same kind of car, kind of wear the same clothes, even marry wives that are similar, because their personalities are similar. And you know this, if you're a kid and you've grown up, if you look more like your father, you're going to think and act more like your father. If you look more like Aunt Susie, you're going to tend to think and act like her. That we're predisposed to be introverts, or we're predisposed to be extroverts, and so on. So my point is, what we are in the womb makes a big difference. And just pop over to Jeremiah 1 for a minute. What we are in that womb, what we inherited, our predispositions, our likes and dislikes, they all come genetically. And then we mold and shape ourselves according to the environment. But the heredity is far more important. Jeremiah 1 and verse 4. The word of the Lord came in to me and saying, before I formed you in the belly, I knew you. He knew it'd be what he'd be like. And before you came forth out of the womb, I sanctified you and I ordained you a prophet unto the nations. So we all have different likes and different dislikes. And so I have a sin that easily besets me. You have one that's different, and it besets you. And so my point is, it's not always the way a child is raised. When God said, train up a child in the way he would go, number one, he won't depart from it when he's old, was written to a people, a community, that all knew God, all knew what his laws were, and you had the case of if a child badmouthed the parents, that he'd be stoned. So what do you think? In that environment, that child is going to always kind of come back, because that was the way society was, wasn't it? Today, it's so different. It is just so different. And so parents anguish over this, and they think, I didn't do it right. I made mistakes. I'm the cause for why my kid goes the way he goes. I don't agree with that. Some of it is genetic. Some of it is the influence of our society. But I come back to this. I was a failure for years and years, and I was mad at life, and I was getting even at life. And you know how I got even at life? I did self-destructive things to myself, and I thought I was getting even with life. And there was a black man on the ship years ago when I was on an icebreaker coming back from Antarctica, and he asked me a question. We were alone once after lunch. He says, why do you do this, Art? Why do you do this? He said, I'm a black man. You don't know what it's like to be black. But I've faced white people and prejudice and everything all my life. And he says, I was so angry. But he said, you know what? I had to come to a point where I said, I'm going to do what's best for me. I'm not going to play into their games. And I say that to the kids today. Yeah, you don't have perfect parents. And trust me, I was going to be the perfect parent because my parents weren't perfect. And it didn't quite work out like that. And it won't work out that way for you either. You'll see later. My mom said to me, when you're 40, you'll understand, Butchie. And guess what? I got it. We're not perfect. And we do things that we don't want to do. We're not perfect parents, okay? My point is, look, kids, think about it. You're responsible for yourself. You can use your parents as counselors, use the ministry, use others in the congregation, study at school, gain knowledge, and make yourself be what you want to be. It's really on you, is what it is. So here we are, living in a world deceived by Satan the devil. And there's so many pulls on you. And it's contradicting everything you're being taught. And all of these pulls are on every one of us. But I say this, Winston Churchill, and there's others, but I remember the story of Winston Churchill. He hated being raised the way he was. He felt that he was just put down all the time, and he was just had a terrible childhood. But he made a decision, I'm going to be something. I'm going to be better. And Winston Churchill was there when the time came, wasn't he? When England needed him, he was there and he saved the country. How do you know what you're designed for? How do you know what opportunities are going to come up? There's all kinds of young people that were raised in the worst of circumstances, and they grew up to be the top of society, and he was just one of them. It's up to you, isn't it? What you become is not a result of what your parents failed to do. It's not a result of the music. It's not a result of the peer pressure out there. Ultimately, it will be a result of what you choose to do. So I ask you today, there's poison over here. Would you drink it? No. What about if it really gave you a rush before you died? A real high. Would you take it? No. Well, how about this? What if there was a really handsome man or beautiful woman, you knew that they had AIDS, and they wanted you to have sex with them? Would you do it? Well, how about it? You can always put a condom on. Would you do it? Would you trust that? Well, wait a minute. People are playing Russian roulette out there, aren't they? Aren't they? Decisions you make matter. And they will matter all through your life, and they'll have a response later. So it's up to you to make decisions not to be like everybody else, not to make the mistakes our parents make. Believe me, you'll make your own. But don't blame others for our circumstances. We've got to take responsibility. That black man changed my life. I really thought about that. Why am I doing this? Well, because I'm angry. But what about, why don't I take care of myself? Why don't I do what's best for me? Anyway, that's my point. Here you are young, and you can prepare yourself. But see, kids don't do it. I ask you this. Have you ever seen this? The perfect financial deal comes along. You're not prepared. You don't have the money. Oh, if you had the money, you could have bought the house. It would be worth $1 million today. It's so many times it slips through our fingers because we don't have the money. Okay? The perfect job opportunity comes along, but we didn't get the credentials. And so we're not going to get the job. See, that's the point of youth, isn't it? To get prepared. To make the decisions now so when the deal comes, you got some money. When the opportunity comes, you've got what it takes. And it's up to you. You can get out of life whatever you want to get out of life. It's an opportunity of a lifetime if you can understand this. Do what is in your own best interests. Galatians 6. There's a fundamental law that is one of the greatest laws in the universe, and yet we sometimes act as though it isn't working. Galatians 6. Here it is. The most powerful law in the universe, governing all things. It's the law of this, cause and effect. And God puts it this way in verse 7. Don't be deceived. Man, is that powerful. We got a world that's deceived. We can do everything wrong and get a right result. Oh, no. You ever notice on TV or the movies, the hero smokes like a windpipe, like a chimney, but he never gets lung cancer, does he? Has sex with every girl that comes his way, never gets a disease. You understand? It's a lie. Don't be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that will he reap. There it is. Man, the most powerful law in the universe. Yeah, it is. For every action, there's an equal reaction. For everything you do and every choice you make, there's going to be a reaction. Do the right thing, right result. Wrong thing, wrong result. And so Job said, as I've seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness, they reap the same. It's so important, I think. So don't get sucked into the values of this age. It's a deceit. It's a lie. Don't do it. Don't blame others. Don't blame other people, your parents. Don't blame the society. It's all a lame excuse. Let's go to Proverbs 1. You are the one who's responsible for your life, not anybody else. A person who desires to be smart will think about this. They'll think and they'll compare and make reasoned decisions. But you can't teach someone who's foolish. God says, Proverbs 1, verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom and justice and judgment and equity, to give subtlety, that is wisdom, to the simple, and to the young man knowledge and discretion. So beautiful. A wise man or a wise woman, a young man or a young woman will hear and increase in learning, and somebody of understanding, while they will attain to wise counsels. So there's wisdom out there, if we'll seek it. The experience of those who went before you is absolutely invaluable. I remember after being in the Navy for several years and hating life and hating my parents and hating everything else, I went and asked my mom, well, Mom, what was it like for you? she just started to tell me what she grew up in, what her life was like. I went, whoa, what if that would have been me? I couldn't have survived it. I would have been twice as angry. So, you know, I learned later she did a great job considering. And I asked her questions and she told me things that were so wise. If I only could have listened earlier, I would have learned. So the point that I make today is that we think about the wealth of knowledge our parents have. You ought to probe their depths. So what was it like for you, Mom and Dad? How was it when you lived? What mistakes did you make? What did you learn? And listen to it and think about it, and you can be armed with such knowledge. You know, Mr. Armstrong said this, you know, experience is the best teacher. He said, no, it isn't. It's the hardest teacher. You can learn from what others have experienced. And this is what parents are for. You need not fear them. And parents, what happens when our kids come to us and tell us they have a problem? What happens if a kid tells the parent, I actually did something wrong? Do they get in trouble for it? Or do they get helped? Do they feel like they can come to you and tell you what's on their mind, even if they're mad at you? Do you understand my point? We've got to create an environment where our kids can come to us and they can say, well, yeah, I think this is wrong, or I'm hurting here, or I'm hurting there, and they'll have someone that's understanding and not just corrective, you know, how dare you, you know, kind of stuff. It's important, I think, for all of us. Music on you pulling. There's peer pressure. There's a spirit in this world that's an ugly spirit that isn't one of cooperation. Sex and drugs, spirit of anger, all of that to entice you. But here's what God says in verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, consent not. Don't go with them. Don't raise your hand because you want to look like the others, you know. Be willing to stand and be your own person. Choose who you're around, Proverbs 13 and 20, because the peer pressure is important. And what you can learn from people is really important. I remember watching this video. I don't know if I sent one out here or not, but we'll get it. About rock and roll, and was it Korn, I think, was the group, and the guy was being interviewed, and he laughed, and he said, we have control of your children. You know, they're playing our music on your radio in the car. They're playing our music and getting our message on your CDs at home. We have control of them. You don't. Well, sometimes because we won't even let them come to us. But they have an audience there. So anyway, in Proverbs 13 and verse 20, it says this, he that walks with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Korn is not wise. Okay? These rock groups are not wise. They are not the ones to follow. So when it says don't walk with sinners, it doesn't have to just be people. It's the kind of people you hang with, certainly. But it also is the influence of TV and music and magazines and all the rest of it. Thousands of things working on you, wanting you to follow them, wanting you to be like they are. You know why? Because they love you? Oh, no. They want you to validate them. That's what it does. You go along with them, it validates them. They feel good about themselves. Think about it. Do they have your best interests at heart? Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9, rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in your days of your youth, and walk of the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. But know thou that all these things God will bring you into judgment. That is, look, you're going to be judged by your life. Not that God's going to hold you up and smack you down. Life is a mirror, and it will give you back exactly what you put into it. Ever think about it? What do you want out of life? What do you want, really? And how do you go about getting it? Man, I'd ask my parents and my teachers now if I had it to do over. I'd seek wise counsel from people. I'd think, and I wouldn't run with the pack. I wouldn't do it. I would learn now. So I know. It's hard. It's hard. Life is difficult right now. And I think about this often. It's hard for me, but it's much worse for the kids that live today. It really is. So it says in verse 1 of Ecclesiastes 12, I ask you this, young people, to think about it. Make a commitment to live the right way. Because the right way is in your interests overall, and you're not going to experience the terrible kickbacks that the others will. So it says this, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, while the evil days come not, that is the days I'm experiencing now with arthritis and weakness and health problems. For the years draw near when you shall say, I have no pleasure in them. Enjoy your youth, but I say this, remember the future is your choice. It's your life now. It really is. It's nobody else's. So take responsibility now for yourself. And the choice is yours. Make the right choice.